Hello, Jordan.
What's up, Michael?
We're back with the How to Become a Personal Trainer podcast every Tuesday morning of 2024 and beyond.
Except maybe in December. We took a week off in December of 2023. Maybe we'll do that in 2024, December.
Maybe we won't. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll push through. Maybe we'll ascend into the holiday season this year instead of, fall on our faces.
Maybe. Time will tell.
Who knows?
What are you drinking? You got aminos?
Ice water out of a reverse osmosis filter, although this is a plastic bottle, which I do not condone any longer. I need to get a metal bottle.
Yeah, you're not big on the plastics anymore.
240,000 nanoparticles of microplastics in the average 1 liter plastic water bottle. Now, that's not what this is, right? It's a different kind of plastic, but that's insane.
What kind of plastic is that?
I don't know. Not the same as like an ice mountain.
Oh, you mean like an Aquafina type bottle?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And we don't, obviously we don't know what that means. Like, is that actually for sure bad for us? And if so, how bad is it? We don't know. But 240,000 is a lot of plastic. I don't need to be drinking that much plastic. You know?
Man, dude.
We need tests at 1K, not at 200.
240K.
Test levels at 240,000.
Oh, I thought you were saying you want your microplastic levels at 1K.
No. I want my microplastics at zero.
We want 240,000 test levels.
I don't know what that would be. That would be, my brain can't even comprehend that. I got a couple random things here. Actually, first, shout out Chris Gates. Chris Gates in the mentorship. I said we would hit on this in the podcast, so we will. We just did a Q&A. And Chris Gates said, Mike, how's not scrolling going? And basically, if you're not scrolling, how are you reading this? Like, ha, 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 which is good. That's clever, Chris. But scrolling, let me explain. When I say I'm not scrolling, and by the way, I've scrolled on Twitter some.
No.
Yeah, I've scrolled on Twitter some. Not a ton, but
some. I didn't know that. But not on Instagram.
No, not on anywhere else. But here's the thing. When I say not scrolling, if I have a bunch of text messages and I need to go down a little bit on my phone to look at them, I do that.
Of course.
But even on a desktop to read the questions in the mentorship, there's kind of a scroll. When I say not scrolling, I'm not going on For You feeds. I'm not scrolling through Reels, TikToks, YouTube Shorts, any of those this where you end up doom scrolling. I still, use my phone. If I'm writing in a notes app and I need to move the phone a little bit, I do that. But I avoid algos that are essentially trying to infiltrate and ruin our brains.
Yeah. I thought that was self-explanatory.
Okay, maybe it is.
No scrolling on social media. What are you seeing on Twitter though? Or formerly Twitter, now X.
What am I seeing? What am I not seeing on there,
Yeah, what are you seeing? Anything good?
No. What I actually do is I really don't like if I just scroll the algo, I end up seeing, a random street fight. I end up seeing stuff that I don't need to be seen.
Of course, me too,
but I'm wasting my life away watching them. So I'll have a handful, 3 to 7 people who I type in their name and then I go to what they have tweeted and then I read their tweets up until I'm caught up on their tweets and then it saves them as recent searches. So that's primary use of Twitter. No, I'm going to keep, maybe someday I'll reveal my sources, but okay. Not right now.
Okay. Mm-mm.
So that's to answer Chris's question.
All right. Good.
I have a theory that you're not going to like. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say that you've been using that treadmill, getting your cardio in.
I have. I feel fantastic.
Dude. Yeah. You did 12 incline, 3.4 speed for 30 minutes. You got some good cardiovascular activity right there.
Yeah, it was reasonable. Give me a few weeks to build up my base before I start taking my blood pressure again on Jordan's recommendation.
What's your theory?
It's not a, it's,
It's a fact.
It's between the two, but you're not going to like it.
I bet I'll
actually,
love it.
Actually, I'll start. No, you're not going to like it. I'll start with this. You and I have different GI tracts, I have come to understand, because the amount of insoluble fiber that you consume, if I get close to that, I don't digest food.
What happens?
You know, I'm not, for the pod, for the audience, I'm not going to be graphic, but my food doesn't get digested and absorbed. It doesn't get absorbed into my body and used. It doesn't get broken down. The insoluble fiber acts as this capsule that just carries it through.
Yep.
And so I've had to significantly reduce my Bran Buds intake, unfortunately, and things are very dialed.
Oh, good.
So yeah, it's good. I actually really liked, when I first started having them, I was essentially only eating Christmas cookies. And I've come to realize that it's an excess of sugar and, you know, high amount of calories that actually caused me, you know,
sugar and butter.
Yeah. But specifically sugar, because there were times where, you know, my wife bought these like Airhead candy, like not an Airhead, but it's Airhead in like this form. Like it looks like an oversized Skittle, but it's Airhead.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't want them, but it is sugar.
That's just sugar. Yeah. That's straight sugar.
That would cause like GI discomfort, distress, and basically non-optimal digestion, where reducing the intake of those processed sugars, just like cutting out desserts and eating slightly fewer calories overall, maintenance or in a slight deficit, has led to things being way, way, way better and normal and feeling really good compared to, I don't know why, but I used to have a theory that like essentially increasing calories would cause more waste and like get things figured out if you were backed up or whatever. And that proved incorrectly.
Yeah. It doesn't. Yeah. I don't think that's how it works.
No, it's not how it works. Might've been a justification to have a few extra Christmas cookies. Who knows? But
just need to get this out. So I'm just going to eat more shit.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Clog my GI up. That sounds.
Yeah.
Not right.
But who would have known that, like, you know, eating traditionally healthy foods and in reasonable quantities would lead to the body properly regulating and getting you feeling good?
Bro, eating high quality food is the most underrated thing right now. Mm-hmm. Just like eating super, super high quality. It's just the best.
It's the best.
I think we should go back to clean eating. We need to bring clean eating back.
I'm on day 5 of zero desserts and zero processed, like no chewy bars, no like, yeah. I don't remember if we talked about this in our last podcast, which was just 2 days ago we recorded it, where I would have been on day 3, but day 5.
Just got to give them that perspective.
Context.
Just so you guys know.
I'm not that impressive. Just like, we're not a week into this. But tell me, what do you mean?
Dude,
clean eating. You're bringing it back single-handedly?
No. Quadruple-handedly. My two hands, your two hands. We're going to bring it back.
Okay.
I just feel super good, you know? Just salmon, eggs, avocado, Bran Buds, just, you know, apples, watermelon, blueberries, blackberries.
Yep.
Chicken.
White potato, sweet potato. White rice.
Yeah, roasted potatoes, rice.
Foods that are rich in micronutrients, fiber, that you individually digest well. So there's going to be individual variants here,
nuts,
right?
Like nuts, almonds, pumpkin seeds, pepitas, which are pumpkin. Yep, love that.
Some wasabi flavored almonds.
Brazil nuts. What are they called? King nuts. What's the king? Walnuts. Yeah.
They call walnuts king nuts?
It's funny. That's like the literal translation in Hebrew for walnuts is king nut. Yeah. I was like, what's the name for king nut? Yeah.
Bro, I'm fully on board with this. I think the one thing that I want to highlight is individual variation in food choices. Some people feel better eating X. Some people feel better eating Y. But making it primarily those foods and all, you know, fruits, vegetables, meat, whole grains.
Yeah. Just the best.
We were just talking about this. We were talking about this without getting into details, like people reaching out to you who started having medical issues of various kinds, who were on very high saturated fat, moderately low fruit and vegetable diets, having real issues, and how, you know, there is no one best diet, and many can work for different individuals. But if we had to pick one, something like the Mediterranean diet is really close.
Yeah, that's large scale data. Most people, Mediterranean diet is like generally the healthiest for sure. It's hard to argue that.
And we went so hard anti-saturated fat, anti-red meat in the 90s and pro like low fat, high sugar, essentially like Snackwell branded cookies. My mind always goes to like became so popular. Yeah. We should crush those. But, and then the pendulum swung hard back the other way to like, you know, eat your bull testicles and eat 4 pounds of beef every single day and eat 100 grams of saturated fat every single day. And that's actually the optimal way. Like we went way too far this way. There's nothing wrong with some saturated fats, but it needs to be with it. It would be better if it were within reason.
Correct. Correct. 100%.
All right. Jordan's bringing back clean eating.
We're both bringing it back.
Okay. I'm in.
We're both bringing it back. That should be your first post back on social media. Hey,
I don't what's up, know. Everyone?
I'm clean eating. Ice cream doesn't fit your macros. All right.
Ice cream will. This is fascinating. This is fascinating. I saw a random N equals one thing where this person drank coffee right before bed and like monitored her sleep score on her watch and then did the same thing with a whole bunch of sugar before bed, like a bunch of candy, and her sleep score was and it's one person and it's just one night of each. So
right.
It's really not meaningful, but it was significantly worse with the sugar.
Interesting.
Which I found interesting. Yeah.
That would be cool if she did that like every day for 2 weeks with sugar and then every day for 2 weeks without sugar. Like that would be interesting to see.
Yeah.
That might make a really good YouTube video. I might talk to Mitch about that and do that for a YouTube video. That's super smart.
Bro, do it. Run with it.
How's your lifting going?
Strong.
Love that.
2024 is a real year. It's a real year, Jordan. But it's still just like push-pull leg, hitting each body part once per week, not doing anything crazy in terms of trying to add muscle, but keeping like a strong lifting base, seeing slight strength gains in some areas, and just feeling good and focused on adding cardio, which I've done successfully for a short amount of time, and adding more stretching and mobility.
Oh, yeah. Big mobility guy now.
No, I wouldn't go that far.
You're a big mobility guy now.
I wouldn't go that far, but I feel much better if I do even 15 to 20 minutes would be awesome. But it's actually about a 30-minute mobility routine that in the morning I've been doing most mornings for a little while and feels good.
What's like your favorite mobility exercise that you've been doing? What's the one mobility drill that you do that you're like, God, this is just the best?
So there aren't any, but I'll say two
None?
Things. There aren't any, but I'll say two things. I'll say a few things. While I'm doing it, the toe stretch.
Oh yeah.
I feel the most because I've really never done it. I've done a little bit in yoga back in the day, but I've really never done it. So I feel it while I'm doing it. Like, wow, this is crazy. What I feel the most like a positive residual effect is all of the thoracic, you know, flexion, extension, and rotation, and not just like I'll do it in my warm up before every workout, right? I'll cat cow a few kind of lazily and do a few T-spine rotations. I'm like, all right, on to the next thing. But really doing high rep, full range of motion, multiple T-spine mobility drills.
Yeah.
For a short amount of time, and then for example, before this morning's workout, when I was going through my normal pre-workout warm-up and I did the T-spine stuff, I could feel the bigger range already in a short amount of time, which is pretty wild.
Dude, it's the best.
Mm-hmm.
T-spine rotation is just, oh, so good.
Yeah. I had another one. I didn't even tell you about this yet. You're going to be so pumped. Lateral flexion of the lumbar spine. Basically, dude, like a nice QL stretch.
That's feels, what I'm saying.
I know. I never got into it, but I think I'm sold.
Wow. Dude, I can't believe you didn't tell me this. I was like going all in on this one.
You were going all in.
How'd you do it? Did you do it standing up? Did you do it on the 45 degree hyper? Like, where'd you do it?
Yeah, I've done a few variations. I've done the half kneeling loaded variation.
Oh yeah.
But,
love that
really
one.
Just taking the standing cross leg variation seriously, yep, and like really, yep, trying to walk my hand down my leg on the, yeah, non-working side and actually holding it for 45 to 60 seconds and trying to get deeper and deeper into the stretch and breathing.
Yep.
Increase the range and just had my low back feeling really good.
Dude, feels amazing.
Yeah.
That opening up the QL. Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah.
There's just nothing like it.
Well, I'd take a nasty pump over that, but yes, there are things like it, but not like it. But I'm with you for all intents and purposes. Yeah.
No. You can't compare a pump to mobility. Like, they're two separate things. You can do both.
You can compare things that are separate.
No.
Can.
Not in this situation.
Okay. All right.
No. Oh, but yes. Yeah, that's great. I love that.
The combination of cardio, mobility, reduced screen time, reduced processed food, and specifically sugar intake. I mean, it's obvious, right? Like, this is all obvious stuff that we're saying, but day-to-day life makes it easy. Like, it's much easier to watch something on TV or the computer versus doing the mobility routine. It's much easier to eat this thing that hits our pleasure centers versus refraining from having that or just having an apple instead. It's obvious, but it's not easy.
How's your caffeine intake?
Slightly higher, actually.
Interesting. Where's that coming from?
It's, well, I don't know if it's higher or not. This we're 18 minutes in. And I feel like this is just Mike rants about recent things.
I'm just trying to bring up all the things that I have a feeling you're going to really enjoy talking about.
I actually wasn't going to go on this whole diatribe, but maybe a few people are interested. I had an incredible observation when I was in Florida.
Okay.
Because we had some really bad weather for most of the trip. You know, bad, still better than Minnesota, but no sun, very cloudy, colder than normal. And I still felt really good. And, I was trying to think about what I do differently when I'm there, you know, more human interaction. Like, what are the things that are different? More time outside. One of the things that is different is the coffee there is weaker and I don't use Splenda or Sweet'n Low. Instead, I use Stevia because that's what's there. Like, I'm not, put it in. And I drink more coffee when I'm there and I feel good versus here when I drink coffee, I make it stronger and I use Splenda or Sweet'n Low. And I don't know. I don't think I feel bad when I'm here, but since coming back, I've made the coffee a little weaker, use Stevia instead. So what I'm saying is, even though, yes, blah, 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 science says artificial sweeteners are fine, I'm on board with that because I'm not smart enough to not be on board with that. Personally, in a short window, I have noticed increased mood and like better brain function in some way. And I'm you're changing so many variables that is it that you're eating healthier, that this is actually what's causing it, not this other thing? Sure, maybe. But I think sweetening my coffee with Stevia and having less other types of artificial sweeteners overall may be having a positive effect on my life.
Dude, I believe that. You know, it's interesting. Like, I have diet sodas, no problem, and I feel fine with them, but I never put Splenda or Sweet'n Low in my coffee or in anything. There's something about, especially Sweet'n Low, that like neon pink packet that if I rip it open and put that in my, I immediately feel bad. Immediately. Like as I put it in, I'm like, this just doesn't feel good to me. And like, so I've never really put sweetener in my coffee, but like,
And sweet and low is saccharin and Splenda is sucralose. So they are different sweeteners. And I think the data behind sucralose is better and more positive than the data behind saccharin, which that's why like saccharin is in less places these days.
Mm. Yeah. I just don't, when I put it in, I don't like either of them, but, like diet soda, I'm fine. Like with aspartame, like no issues whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
but like, something about that sweet and low or ripping that packet open.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely mental. Maybe not.
No.
But just don't feel good when I have those at all.
We might be onto something here. We might be going anti-artificial sweetener.
Dude, I think we should do that.
Clean eating, anti-artificial sweetener. By the way, I'm fully on board with the research of subbing out sugar for artificial sweetener is very good, especially if you have to lose body fat or if your clients have to lose body fat to be healthier. It's definitely a better option. Like, yeah. Hands down.
I'm still pro no artificial question. Sweetener.
But yeah, but you're pro in general, but just not for you personally?
Yeah, correct.
We're just trying to, are we trying to optimize here with clean eating and reducing artificial sweeteners?
Dude, you know what? I'm trying to go the opposite way. I just want to see. I just want to experience it. I just want to live it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like we've been told so many things that, and we get bought in and we live in an echo chamber. It's like, let me try the other. Let me see what they're saying. Let me give it a shot.
And when the echo chamber is justified with science, it's hard to like, yeah.
You know, let me give it a shot. See how it makes me feel.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I feel like more people should do that. It's like everyone gets stuck in this echo chamber. Like, this is right. This is right. I'm only going to do this. And then they build up this like intolerance for the other way, like this mm-hmm. mental and emotional intolerance for like, well, you're just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well,
if you do cardio, you're stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's, which is what you and I grew up with in the industry.
Yeah.
Like, we grew up with a group of people saying, cardio stupid, don't do cardio, da da da. And then people are having real fucking issues because they're not doing cardio.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with stretching. I was brought up in an age in which stretching was stupid and you shouldn't stretch and stretching is going to ruin your lifting. It's like, let me give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
This shit feels great. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So just give it a shot.
Yeah. Everyone said I don't need to train my neck.
Losers.
Give it a shot.
Give it a shot.
Yeah. I love that. Should we keep a list of what we're doing? Because we both may forget.
Did you ever read Peter Attia's book in the hole?
Yeah.
Did you really? You finished it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I didn't. You're just like, let's keep a list of things we're doing. I was like, I remember we used to say like we were going to read this whole book and I just never fucking finished it. Was it good?
Yeah, it was. It was good.
The whole thing was good?
The whole thing was good. The last chapter is very different. It's the last chapter is all about emotional health. And like he talks about his own story, which is cool
lost
in its own way. That's okay. I know. I didn't tell you. We've got probably 40 emails from people asking when we're going to talk about his book and saying how they're massively disappointed in you. But yeah. It's,
yeah.
No, we didn't get any of those emails, actually. I'm just kidding. Artificial sweeteners, clean eating.
Stretching.
Cardio. Oh, wow. We're really making a list. Okay. No processed, minimal processed dessert sugar.
I don't have a lot of that anyway. I'm more of a savory guy. I'm more like chips type stuff.
Cool.
What else?
People like when we answer questions.
You want me to pull up my Q&A?
I think that's what we should do.
Okay. Here's one. This is not fitness related at all, but some people ask me questions that have nothing to do with fitness. And we'll see. I think he might like this one. This woman said, if he won't call me his girlfriend after dating for 6 months, is that being cautious or he's not that into me?
Hmm. It's a great question. I lean towards it's not a great sign, but we need more context.
Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. I would advise this woman to check out attachment types because this sounds pretty classic, avoidant attachment style. It's not a great sign, but it's not the end of things. He could just be being very cautious.
Cautious of what?
Well, before we get into that, have you had the conversation of what are we? Like, are you just assuming that, you know, that it's that you're monogamous and that he's not seeing other people because you're not seeing other people? I would definitely have that conversation if you haven't already. You know, I can't keep up with the younger generation. There's like different phases that didn't exist when we were coming up, right? Like, mm-hmm. Are you talking? Are you in a situationship? No, these are like,
there's are those like distinct phases.
I believe so, based on what has come across my Twitter feed. But that's not the majority of what I'm consuming.
You're deep in Twitter, bro.
What do you think?
I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot to unpack. I love like you went a different way than I would have went. Like, I think you're smart to go look at attachment theories, all of that. You have to have the conversation of like, hey, you know, I'm at a point where I'd like to know what we are. Are we monogamous? Are we, you know, exclusive? That's like the term that I grew up with. Like, are we exclusive or not?
Yep.
But I just immediately assumed that she had that conversation with him, but it's not fair just to assume that. So definitely you have to have the conversation. Are we exclusive? Like, we're 6 months in, like we've been seeing each other for 6 months, dating for 6 months, but like, do you want to make this exclusive or not? If you haven't had that conversation, you have to have that. If you've had that conversation and he's still like, I don't want to call you my girlfriend yet. Like, I still don't want to be exclusive yet. Then what that means is he still just wants to hook up with other people. Like, he doesn't want to be, that's what I would imagine, right? Like, I don't see other, like, there's no reason to be cautious. You've already been together for 6 months. You've been seeing each other for 6 months. If the only thing that he doesn't want to do is say he's exclusive, then he's saying that he wants to be with other people, which, by the way, like, isn't necessarily bad. The good news is he's being honest about it. Mm-hmm. Like, essentially, he's saying, I don't want to make this promise to you that I am not going to be able to keep. Mm-hmm. You would much rather him be honest about it than lie and not be honest about it. What now comes up is you have to say, okay, well, let's say he just still wants to like not be exclusive and hook up with other people. Now you have to make your choice and say, okay, at least he's being honest. That's a good thing. Do I want to be with someone who does not want to be exclusive yet? And then you can say, listen, all right, well, that's fine, but I want to move on. I want to be exclusive with someone. And so this might be where we part ways. In which case, then he might be like, well, you know what? I don't want to lose you. I don't want to give this up. So yeah, let's be exclusive. In which case, then that might be how it works. I wouldn't give him the ultimatum, but I would say, this is what I need. And so that would be that. But assuming you've had that conversation, and I made up that scenario, but assuming that's the scenario, I would just say he just is still wanting to keep his options open and look for other people. But I wouldn't necessarily think that it means he's not that into you or he's being cautious. That's just what I think. What do you think?
I think that's the most likely situation is what you just described.
Yeah.
Age is also a factor here. Like, if you're both 21, it's very different than if, you know, you're both 30.
Correct. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tiffany said, have you ever done a bulk? What was it like? You want to talk about a bulk?
Jordan goes, what will Mike definitely want to talk about here?
Yep.
There we
That's
go.
Literally.
Do you
That's
literally.
That's how I'm approaching.
Why don't you start?
You start.
No,
you
no,
want
no,
me to start?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah, I've done a bulk. I've done a bulk in two different ways. I've done the bulk from the powerlifting way. Like, there were times when I've done like the classic old school GFH bulk, get effing huge, where there were times where I just wanted to eat as much as I could. And I was largely inspired by the guys at Westside and also by that bodybuilder that Lyle McDonald featured on that article. That
Lee Priest.
Remember the one eating the chicken wings, Lee Priest? Yeah. I was like, well, if he did it, then I could do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So when I finished getting as absolutely shredded, I worked with Martin Bergen, got absolutely shredded. And I like tried to maintain it for a while. But then when I went full on powerlifting, I was like, screw it. I'm just going to go nuts. And I got up to the heaviest I've ever been. I thought I wanted to get to like 185 and just like compete there. And then I just quickly, I think by about like 160, I was like, I'm so fat. I was like, this is just not okay. Mm-hmm. And so then I had done other bulks, which were a little bit leaner. And I've done bulks where, you know, I did more bodybuilding style. But the thing is, I just hated it. I just really didn't like it. I didn't like it from the training perspective, especially when it was bodybuilding focused. When it was powerlifting focused, I loved it. But when it was bodybuilding focused, I just hate that style of training.
You only did that once, right?
I did that with Paul Carter once. But then I had done that previously when I was younger. But that was like the most...
A power building bulk, though. It's the best of both worlds.
Never really enjoyed it.
You weren't power building. You were doing much more single muscle work.
Paul?
Yeah.
Very isolation focused, very muscle group. Yeah. Correct.
Cool.
What about you?
Yeah, I've bulked many times. And they got slightly more successful each time that I did them. The biggest mistake I made early on was just eating too many calories, eating too much dietary fat, and gaining too much fat in a short period of time, cutting the bulk off early. Because everybody has a personal preference with how fat they'll let themselves get intentionally. And you can push that a little bit, but like Jordan said, he hit a ceiling at 160 where you're like, I can't keep going like this. Everyone has their own personal ceiling there based on how they look and feel. And once you hit that, it's hard to continue bulking. And it takes a long time to build muscle. So minimizing fat gain through the process allows you to be in a surplus for longer, like many, many months, if not years. And so, controlling your calories and not gaining weight too quickly is really important, which is something I slowly learned over the years. I want to say my first bulk was in 2012 on my own, reading like simplyshredded.com and eating way too much and eating a giant bowl of ice cream every night, like with casein protein on top of it. They were fun times, but when was my next bulk? I definitely had one in 2014 or 2015. I bulked in the summer of 2016.
Oh, you got huge that summer.
Got big.
You got huge that summer.
Well, you were there a bunch of the time, and I was out there most of the time. Or no, not summer of 2016. Summer of 2017? No, summer of 2016.
2016.
Out with Gary. And that was amazing. Because we were just working, training our faces off, eating our faces off. And then we were in a nice, we were in nature, right? We were out east.
Oh, like, yeah.
There was the sun. I was taking probably 15 to 20,000 steps a day, eating 4,000 plus calories, eating 600 grams of carbs a day. So I was very active. I was sleeping 9 hours a night and I was training
hard. Not on a comfortable bed. We shared a bed.
I didn't mind that. Oh yeah. Yes,
you forgot about that.
I forgot. I was thinking,
I guess, when I was traveling, thinking of a different you had your summer. Own bed, but
yeah, well, yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I would come back, we
how did you and Jordan get so close? Well, let me tell you about the time we
shared an air mattress for a summer.
Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. So have I ever bulked? Many times. Patience is huge. Do not expect visual changes, especially shirtless. Like, you can actually expect to look worse shirtless from the beginning of a bulk to the end of a bulk, because a natural lifter is just going to look better with less body fat shirtless. And so you're gaining muscle. You're also gaining fat. You're going to look a little softer. You're not going to like what you see in the mirror, but like strength going up, measurements increasing at the right rates. What you're doing is you're adding muscle so that when you go through a fat loss phase, you're going to be in a better position than you were when you started the bulk in terms of, you know, how you look and how much muscle you have. I don't think I'll ever do like an intense bulk again. Never say never, right? If I ever want to,
I could see you being like 47 being like, I'm doing it.
The only way I could see that is if I hopped on gear. If I got to an age where I was like, all right, I'm gonna do this. But it's I don't like eating that much food, you know, like clean eating we talked about in this episode. It's not the most comfortable or easy thing. I don't have the the desire I had in my youth to be bigger. Like, I don't think it's as cool as I used to think. I'm not motivated for it. The training is very difficult. The amount of volume and intensity that you have to do takes you away from other things in life. So it really is a commitment. Like,
you've got to be real angry.
Yeah. Or you got to manufacture some anger, or you have to have real anger. And then it, like, if you're trying to build a business and you're bulking and you're spending all your time eating and you need the X amount of sleep per night and you need your recovery on point, and you're just like, do a 90 to 120 minute muscle gain workout. You're a few phases in, you've ramped up volume and you're taking a bunch of sets close to failure. And then right after that, go try and do 3 hours of computer work. It's impossible. Like, you, it really, that's what people don't talk about, is how much it taxes you mentally. And so it needs to be your priority. I love coaching people through bulks. I have several clients bulking right now. But yeah, for myself, I don't know that, you know, maybe like a little lean gains approach at some point, but not an all out bulk.
If you have a son, when your son's like 18, like, or a daughter, either one, but like, if your kid wants to go through a bulk,
it's okay to generalize, but yeah.
If your son is getting big,
I want a bulk compared to women, but women through muscle gain phases too. Yes. Okay.
Obviously, like, if you have a son who's like getting big and he's like 18, 19, and you see him like getting thick,
nice,
you're going to be like, you're going to be like, all right, I want to do that. Like, all right, it's bulk. You're going to be like 54 and you're just going to be like, all right, yeah, fuck it, let's go. I'm bulking.
They're
like, his traps are going to be getting huge and you're going to be like,
I understand what you're saying. I mean, I don't know. We'll see when the time comes. A parent getting competitive with their child seems like a mindset that I won't have.
Inspired.
Oh, okay. And
like, you're going to be like, you're going to see
I just show him pictures. I'll be like, look how, I'll be like, here, son, check out this. You think you're
big? Here I am in summer 2016.
Look at this.
He's going to be like, yeah, that's AI. Nice try.
Like, reach out to Uncle Jordan. He'll tell you. He was there.
I was taking C4 in those days. Those are
my 54-year-old voice is Bane. Is that what just happened?
Oh. I guess that's closer to like to your 94-year-old voice.
Is Bane?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
The darkness turns to light.
You have to watch True Detective.
Oh, I know. I know. I need to. I forgot what that was. Yeah. Okay. I'll look that up. I was watching Narcos last night.
It's on HBO. Narcos is really good. I didn't remember it that well when you brought it up, but when you said the darkness turns to light, like one of the protagonists in True Detective season one is like this nihilist, materialist, atheist character, but he's brilliant. And he's also very morally sound. And like, he's a very likable character, and he just has a cool arc in the season.
Got it. Okay. All right. I'll look it up. I'll watch it next. Once this Roman Empire is done.
Yeah. It's HBO. So there's, you know, it's a little, there's like a couple raunchy scenes, but for the most part, it's very good.
Dude, there's raunchy scenes in Narcos. There was like back to back to back straight up sex scenes. I mean, it's hard to get raunchier than Lord of the Rings.
Game of Thrones.
What's the fucking Game of Thrones? Like, that's, if I was in public and doing cardio and I was like, geez, I can't allow someone, people are going to think I'm just watching straight up porn with this. Like, it was nuts.
The way they did it in Game of Thrones, though, was like, this is what was happening at the time. Or maybe I'm misremembering, but
in this made up world.
I don't remember.
This is what was happening.
No. Let me finish my point. It felt more tasteful. It didn't feel like the intent was like audience arousal. Like, it just felt like it was going on, but it wasn't like, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, or maybe, I don't know. But I can't think of a scene like Red Woman and Jon Snow, like, you know, random girls in the brothel, or like Tyrion with some chick. I don't remember any scenes in the show that were like, like, there was nudity and there was hooking up, but it wasn't like sex. I don't know how to describe it. But in True Detective, it's like, lustful. I don't know how to describe the difference, but it's definitely different. It's definitely like, all right, there were some parts in
like Game of Thrones where I was like, wow, they just showed like complete full frontal. And I felt like they didn't need
completely unnecessary. Wow. Yeah.
I did not need that frontal.
I'm gonna make a claim right now. Sex scenes are completely unnecessary in all movies, and a movie has never been better because of the sex scene.
Yeah.
Like you can have romance in art without being blatant and like just like showing everything. Like you can still get your point across and it doesn't take away from the plot. Like it almost seems like, I don't know. If people want to watch that, they can go watch porn if they want to watch that. Like I don't need to be watching that. I want to watch the movie for what other things the movie offers.
I don't know anyone who doesn't get a little uncomfortable during a sex scene while they're watching it in a movie. Like if you're in a theater or like with your parents or your family, like everyone gets a little bit uncomfortable when that happens. I feel like they only do it so that they can put it into the trailer. Because in the trailer, you don't get uncomfortable watching it. In the trailer, it's like it creates more excitement. Like, gotta see that. It's like like you have all this crazy stuff, and like that's one of the like the flashes in the trailer, and it makes it more marketable. But when it's actually in the movie, it's like that literally didn't contribute at all.
Right.
And all that's I'm exactly thinking about is, how did they do that in front of the whole cast and crew and all the film? That's literally all I'm thinking about is like, I wonder how many takes that took. And like I don't know. There's so much I'm wondering, like about the two actors involved in that.
Yeah,
like, did they end up dating after that? Right. Were their partners watching? Like, right. I, you know,
yeah. The whole I'm just an actor during this scene. I don't know. I've never fully bought into that. Like, this is my job, and I'm 100% professional.
You're a human.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, me neither. Give us another question, Jordan. We're just rifling through today.
This person said, should I use pre-workout when I'm on a cut just as a burst of energy? Like, I think she's asking not for like actually pre-workout, but just like because she's tired. Which Jordan did. I've done that before. Mm-hmm. But like, what do you think?
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, not as a long-term health. That's like something you do at 22. Mm-hmm. And then when you get older, you're like, that's just a terrible idea.
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, there's just better, like, is it cognitive? What is the purpose? Are you trying to get computer work done? Because that's where my mind goes, and you're tired and lethargic around it. Then there are better compounds you could be taking, like caffeine plus alpha GPC. Combination would be better than, you don't need beta alanine or you don't need L-citrulline or you don't need a lot of these ingredients that are in pre-workouts to have the mental energy to do work. If you just mean physiologically you need energy to get through life and you want pre-workout to like go drive to the store and get groceries, then I would argue that there's something off, which could be you've been in a deficit too long, you need to do something around sleep quality and quantity. You're in too large of a deficit. You have you're improperly hydrated. You have micronutrient deficiencies from your food choices. Don't. Good question. Maybe once in a blue moon, let it rip, right? Because we got to have a little let it rip in us to offset all of the science in the world. But for the most part, I would not suggest taking pre-workout to do your daily tasks.
Do you worry about total carbs versus net carbs?
I'm a clean eater, so I don't even differentiate as of like a few days ago. No, I don't worry about it. If I'm tracking, I'm tracking total carbs. I don't like the idea of when you have someone counting macros and you let them count net carbs rather than total carbs, what you're essentially incentivizing is for them to eat like random cookies and protein bars and processed high protein foods that use artificial fiber to get net carbs rather than total carbs, or sugar alcohols to get lower net carb relative to total carb. And even though it may be close to technically correct, meaning most of these fibers are between 0 and 2 calories per gram rather than 4 calories per gram, I don't want to incentivize the person to be eating a lot of those types of foods. So I'm going to have a person in that position tracking total carbs rather than net carbs.
Yeah. It's also, in addition to all of that, it's also just like you're trying to find a way to hack the system. Like the whole thing is just like, all right, well, how can I finagle this? How can I like hack the system to make it? So it's just everything you said on top of anytime you're trying to look for a way to cheat the system, hack the system, like it doesn't work. Mm. It's not good. It just, you get in the mindset of, all right, well, what can I do? Like, okay, this is like a cheat. This is a hack. Stop. It's just not good. It's not a good mentality to have. Mm. And I don't know. When we're talking about clean eating, you don't need to worry about net carbs. Like you're getting good stuff anyway. Like you're eating high quality anyway. You're good. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the times when people are looking for this stuff, they're just looking for ways to be able to eat like a glutton and eat way more. And it's like, it's okay to not eat like a glutton. It's okay to not eat a lot more. Like maybe just, okay, eat this and cool. Like you've got hit your calories, like have some water.
Do you want to have some? I'll let you take that a step further.
Go for it.
Not only is it not okay to not eat like a glutton.
Yeah. It's bad to eat like a glutton.
Yeah.
We'll just go there.
Gluttony is bad. And look.
Gluttony is bad.
Look, if you've been listening to this podcast, I was the definition of gluttony from February 12th, from December 12th to January 12th. Wow. And many times throughout my life, things are better when I do not behave that way, even though it's easier to behave that way. And it's especially hard to break yourself out of that cycle. But once you do and you build a little momentum, like anything in life, it becomes easier and easier and easier.
Yeah. Gluttony is not good.
You spiral up based on your positive habits or you spiral down based on your negative habits.
Yeah. And I think it's one thing to have a gluttonous moment. It's another thing to be gluttonous all the time. Mm. And that's an important distinction to be made where it's like, I think being gluttonous on Thanksgiving is totally fine and probably a good thing. And if you're scared of being gluttonous, then that might be an issue. But if you're being gluttonous every day and you're just always looking for reasons to be gluttonous, and if not being gluttonous means that you have FOMO, that's a problem. Like you don't need to be gluttonous all the time. And you know, it's a real problem.
I think I agree. I might want to take it a step further, which is you could enjoy Thanksgiving without being gluttonous.
No, you can't. No, you can't. There's no way. I'm joking.
No, okay.
I mean, you can, but like it's hard. Like I love pie. And that's like one of the only times in the year that I really have pie. So like I go hard on the pie and I'm a glutton with that pie. Mm-hmm. But like, you can enjoy it without being gluttonous.
I'm the definition of a glutton on Thanksgiving and have been every Thanksgiving of my life.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know that it's right.
Oh, it's right. It's right. Yeah.
I don't know that it's right. Something within my intuition tells me that it's not right.
No. Dude, this year's turducken or last year's turducken, I was a gluttonous with that too. Worth it. Super good. I'm going to do that every year. I'm hungry just thinking about it.
I think we're using gluttony in different terms, but
what do you mean?
I think you can overeat without being gluttonous.
How?
Oh, guess what? Wow. This is amazing. If you overeat on Thanksgiving, you're not gluttonous because
Why?
The definition of gluttony is habitual excess in eating.
Mm.
Gosh.
Wow.
This is
all right. Yeah. Well, that's actually super helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with overeating on a holiday or enjoying yourself from time to time.
Day technically isn't gluttony.
Technically is not gluttony. So you're not being gluttonous when you overeat.
Yep. Love that.
It's habitual.
That's really good to know. You were being gluttonous from December to January.
I need to atone for my gluttony. But yes, I was. I was.
And by the way,
Oxford Dictionary, habitual greed or excess in eating.
That's all right. The habitual part is the most important part.
Wow. Yeah. And gluttony relates to drink as well as food.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Eggnog.
Yeah.
You like eggnog?
No, I never found it worth the, I don't love the taste and it's creamy and nope.
Well, I knew you didn't think it was worth the calories, but like you don't like the taste?
No, I never got, things that are very high fat like don't always sit well with me.
Yeah, you're not a big high fat guy.
Mm-mm.
I remember we would go to like Christmas parties for like our friends or whatever. Yeah, you can, you know, we know you're Jewish, but you can come over and celebrate Christmas with us. And I remember the first time I tried eggnog, dude, I lost it. I was like, what the fuck is this?
You loved
it? Why don't we have it? I loved it. I was like, this is like liquid candy, ice cream. Like it is, I fell in love with it. And I would like beg my mom to buy it for the house. And like it was, yeah.
How much do you think taste preferences are genetic versus versus upbringing?
Probably a lot of both. I would imagine maybe even more upbringing. I think a majority is upbringing, I would imagine. 70, obviously.
80-20 upbringing?
Yeah, probably, if I had to throw that out there. I think, because number one, like your taste can change, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you can develop a taste for coffee. Like no, very few people are ever like, oh yeah, I love coffee. But mm-hmm. then after they drink it for a while, they develop a taste. Same thing with whiskey. Mm-hmm. You can change your taste buds to enjoy whatever it is you're having. Like mm-hmm. that, it can develop over time. So I think it's so much more about like what you're habitually exposed to.
Highlights the importance of, you know, parental involvement in kids' nutrition.
Yeah. We did not have, my parents were not educated on that at all. And we just had a lot of not good stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know.
One more quick one.
How do you manage your mental health?
Doing the right thing, having a routine, physical activity, time outside, in nature, social interaction with others, eating healthy, trying to listen to my conscience. I don't want to go deep on this because I'm not a professional. I don't want to misguide people, but my uneducated opinion would be that in today's day and age, things like talk therapy and SSRIs and like various pills essentially are overrated. You know, not that they're bad and not that they don't have their place, but I think they're probably overused or overprescribed or over relied upon. Yeah.
Do you ever struggle with your mental health?
Yeah. I've said this before, the times when I've struggled more with my mental health, there I could always, maybe not in the moment, but I could eventually identify the reason. Mm. And that was more around feeling anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Because that like generalized anxiety is the thing that experts purport to there to be like no direct cause. Like you just feel anxious for no reason. But if I ever mm-hmm. felt that way, I could always eventually find a reason and then through behavior modification, be in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know if any of this is politically correct. What just popped into my mind would be like the good like soundbite answer would be like how I'm lucky and how grateful I am to not have to struggle with it. And there's probably some of that. But I also I see people who hold on to their mental health disorder as a badge of honor and like to
mm-hmm.
Have their victimhood broadcasted to everyone on the internet
mm-hmm.
and also mm-hmm. aren't simultaneously taking any steps to get better. And like their lifestyle is zero physical activity, like eating like absolute trash, not doing any of the right things, spending 20 hours a day on their phone, exaggeration, obviously, but like, I think people can have really hard lives and really bad childhoods and like things happen to people that is absolutely not their fault that lead them to be much more susceptible to these things. And I'm very grateful and thankful that nothing like that happened to me. But then I think there's another class of people who, you know, hold on to these things and don't try to fix them for whatever reason. Maybe because they don't think that they can. I don't know.
Love that. Completely agree with all that.
How about you?
What was the question? It was, how do you improve your mental health?
No, it was, I thought it was, do you struggle with your mental health? Or how do you manage your mental health? Let's look. Let's get it right.
How do you manage your mental health? Yeah, yeah. And then I asked if you ever struggled with it. Manage it. I think, honestly, the managing really comes into the gratitude aspect, where it's like, anytime I'm struggling, just thinking about everything that I have and thinking, like, all right, like, if I'm struggling, usually I'm struggling thinking about something that I don't have, or how, if something was different, or if something, you know, there was one time, actually, it was something that you said that, like, gave me a lot of perspective. It was when we were on a business trip for when we were writing the book, and which was years ago, but I had a really good routine where I was doing jujitsu every day and I was getting really good work done. And we were out on this business trip and you were just like, man, you've got a really good routine back home. And I was like, oh shit, I have a really good routine. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, whenever I'm thinking about, like, what I don't have or what could be happening, I'm like, but my routine now is pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually really enjoy what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so I think so much of the struggle around mental health, or at least for me, has always been like, what don't I have, or what could be different? Or, and so when I'm just thinking about what I'm grateful for, what I do have, that really is the thing that brings me back, that keeps me centered, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Those are two huge points. A routine of positive habits helping you, and being grateful as a way to have yourself in a better position mentally.
Yeah.
I had another, what was the other thought that just popped into my head? Oh, one of the things that made me have bad anxiety before I knew what anxiety was binge drinking. Like the day after binge drinking, college kinda, and not consistently, but there were times feeling very anxious and just like not feeling good, but not knowing what it was. Mm-hmm. Was definitely a cause. And to that, I would say, you know, substance abuse is just, look, people who struggle with substance abuse are struggling with substance abuse for a reason. Like, it's fun. It is consuming the substance is a solution to another problem that they're having, but it's rarely, and dare I say never, the right solution, because it often creates other problems. And even if they're drugs that you don't think are bad, because of the way that the conversations we have today, like, everyone drinks and alcohol is becoming a little less popular, but like, weed doesn't do anything bad. Weed isn't a real drug. Like, okay. Like, you know, if you can manage it, great. But a lot of people don't effectively.
Yeah. Of course it's a drug.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. People are like, oh, it's not addictive. It's like, oh, all right. Well, there are different aspects of addiction, but like, whether you're smoking, like, no, it's not good for you. Anyone who says it's good. And it doesn't mean that there can't be beneficial properties of it. Like, there can be beneficial properties of red wine. They're just, because overall it's not good for you, doesn't mean that there aren't some things about it that might be beneficial for some people in some quantities. But the way that I think most people are doing it and most people are using it, not beneficial, not overall, not net good, especially if you're abusing it. And I think the biggest one is, if you can't function normally without it.
Mm.
That's, I think, like, the biggest caveat. If you feel like without it, you don't work, that's the biggest issue. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest problem. It's like, if you feel like as a human you need it, then we've got an issue.
Yeah. And for anyone who can relate to what Jordan just said, I've recommended this book 1,000 times, but Anna Lemke's Dopamine Nation book that talks about addiction is one of my favorite books of all time.
Sick. Good pod.
Great pod.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate you. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a 5-star review. If you want to join the mentorship, you can always do that at the link in the description. You just have to fill out an application, and then we'll have a chat. And by say we, I mean Mike will be emailing you, seeing if we're a good fit. Mm-hmm. And that'll be it. Fill out the application. You'll hear back from Mike within a week or so at most. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, let's get it this week. do your workouts, do your strength, do your stretching, do your mobility, do your cardio, do your work, get your sleep, clean eating. It's 2024. It's game time. All right. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
See you.